that's Jenny. But that's not Jenny's dad. If she gets into that car, you may be looking at Jenny for the last time. I'm McGruff, the crime dog. Let me show you something. See that playground? A lot of kids there. Every day in this country, 60 kids disappear. Some run away, but a lot are kidnapped by strangers or even by people they know. Almost 20,000 kids a year. 20,000 kids, one kid at a time. Maybe your kid, on your street, just like Jenny. You know, your kids can learn to protect themselves against crime at home, at school, on the street. Hey, nice going, Jenny. She's going to tell her folks about this. And you can write to McGruff. Learn how to keep your family and your community safe and help take a bite out of crime.
Tuesday, Tony takes Angela's advertising class.
Is she a great teacher or what?
But his special project is stronger than dirt.
An F as in flunk. Fail. Fully.
But you're going to grade on a curve, right?
Who's the boss, then? How do you teach your son that fighting's not the answer?
I gave him enough to say.
The hardest lessons to learn are the ones that hurt the most.
Honey, I'm home.
It's growing pains.
Tuesday.
Lucky! He's got Lucky Charms! They're magically delicious!
Always have to be Lucky Charms! The crunchy old cereal with a rainbow of marshmallow surprises! Pink hearts, yellow moons, orange stars, green clovers, and blue diamonds! Part of this could be a nutritious breakfast. Oh, they're coming! I'll make a snowmobile and zoom away!
Frosted Lucky Charms!
They're magically delicious!
Are you ready for my questions today?
Oh, yeah. So we're jumping into part two of all the questions we have remaining for Stranger Things. So shoot.
Okay. I mean, we're going to go right in with a really big, giant one. Are you ready?
Jump right into it.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Why is the Upside Down frozen in 1983?
Oh, I have no idea. There's so many questions I have for just within that question. But we're going to keep it subdued a little bit and try to remain on topic. I know for me that's really hard to do. See, I'm already starting.
Do you want to talk about remaining on topic or you want to talk about 1983?
See, I'm a walking oxymoronic thing that may or may not have been something we talked about off air. But anyway, okay, so why is the Upside Down frozen in 1983? So many questions. I don't even know where to start. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the disappearance of Will. And when we went back to Nancy's room, we saw a lot of the things that were frozen on that day in that time. It was around the same time that Barbara went missing. And there were just so many different elements surrounding those events that happened on that day. And I don't know if it has anything to do with Vecna and some of it, a little bit, was like time travel was introduced. It's really confusing. I don't have any answers for that, as you can see. I just don't understand why it was incorporated. Obviously, they included it for a reason, and there's going to be some kind of reveal in the fifth season. So,
and we didn't really realize it until they went back, went upside down and going to get Nancy's gun, and then all at once, it wasn't there. And yes. we look around and we're like, oh, no. Like, no wonder it's not there. I haven't put it there yet.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't have any clue why. So does that mean the Upside Down was there in 1982 and continuing to, you know, move forward with the Right Side Up? And then with the beginning of season one, we get stuck? Or I don't know either.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm thinking, okay, it is an alternate dimension. So does time work differently there? Or like I said, there's so many other questions that can come just from that, you know, particular thing that happened. Like,
well, wow. Yeah, and that's very true. The idea of an alternate dimension with time moving differently then brings the question of why was the Upside Down on the same footing as the Right Side Up when Brenda and Will were there? You know, I mean, because Brenda went over and was in the pool. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like she wasn't, yeah. she wasn't like in a different time period when she went over in season one. So now why are we in sort of in a slightly different time period now? I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And just for anybody listening, Brenda is the twin sister of Barbara, just so that everybody knows that.
Oh, he's hilarious, folks. Today's episode will be questions and comedy. Just Tony all day, every day. Tip your waiters.
We're not editing any of this out, by the way.
Oh, good. I'm glad. No, it's not. I mean, you, comedy gold, folks. Comedy gold.
All right. What do you got next for me?
All right. We're going to jump into a different spot and talk about what happened to Murray, Enzo, and Yuri.
That's not Brenda? No? Okay. So what happened to Murray, Enzo, and Yuri? Oh, you know, because... You know, when I sat and I thought about it, it's kind of like the same thing with Argyle and Eden and all those characters, and even Susie, characters that are in this far off place that's not Hawkins, Indiana. And I thought about the same thing with Enzo, you know, and Yuri there in Russia. That's where they're from. We did see the scene towards the end of the final episode of season four, where they're in the helicopter, they got everything working, you know, they picked up Murray, blah, blah, blah. So I think that they will stay there and fight whatever they need to fight from the Upside Down there. Or, I mean, is there a possibility that they could come to Hawkins because of everything that's going on, and that's the epicenter of everything? Everyone could possibly come there. So, you know, I mean,
do you think that Enzo and Yuri are safe in the motherland there? I mean, like, they are not. They're not. They're still in pretty deep doo-doo there. So just totally forget Upside Down or anything else. Like, there's some issues. And once it is discovered that this prison was overrun, like, maybe it's assumed that they were killed also. Maybe they're, you know, footloose and fancy free. Maybe, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a lot that was going on during those last few moments of the episode, you know, right before we actually get back to Hawkins and everyone's gathered there again together. Murray, I was like, where is he? Did he just go off somewhere? Why is he not with them at the cabin? Or did he go back to his location?
I feel like Murray has sort of wormed his way in as a main character at this point.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, him just working together with Jim and Joyce. I mean, he's a core, you know, he's a core part of that the adult group that are fighting,
which I absolutely love. I mean, yeah. You know, I absolutely love how much he kicks ass in, you know, with his black belt. And, you know, at first you think it's going to go horribly, and then all at once he's amazing and saves the day multiple times. It's great.
Right, yeah. And I love all the different characters. You know, I've always said I love the different characters and what they represent. And I think that all the adults there represent these different, what's the word I'm looking for? Just these different types of adults, if that makes sense. You know,
yeah.
Murray is, you know, this, you know, science logic based and, you know, kind of a bit of a comedic goofball, but he can turn serious really quickly. And then there's, you know, Jim and his personality, of course. And then there's Joyce, the mother bear, you know, mama bear. And she's just, you know, but she's smart and she gets her point across. And there's so many different layers within each and every one of them. But I think that they're kind of like to represent this thing. You know, it's almost like that movie and it's a modern movie. What is the movie? Inside Out. And kind of like all these personalities, you know.
I feel like Murray took on a different role. I mean, he usually was sort of the skeptic brains of the operation, spoke Russian, you know, and then all at once he becomes an action hero as well. So, again, just like our last episode talking about what might happen. I'd like to know what happens to Enzo and Yuri. Maybe that will be shown. Maybe they'll play a part. But I feel like Murray will be back. So we'll find out more about that. Enzo and Yuri might have just stayed in that last season just because that's where we needed them. So
Yeah. It's every season they need certain characters to move the story forward. Right. And I think they were a part of that because they were even talking about Enzo and his son and how his son viewed him a certain way. And he wasn't, you know, the best as far as, you know, being there and his son not thinking he could do enough. And there's all those issues with that. So you can't like really gloss over that, you know, so you kind of have to keep him there, but yeah.
Okay. So we feel like we've answered all of our Murray, Enzo and Yuri.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Number three is how did the Russians find the Upside Down and what do they want to do with it?
Oh, I don't have any idea how they found it. I mean, okay, let's just go to just first of all, they built this huge underground multi-level bunker miles under a mall in this small town.
In the middle of the United States.
Yeah. Suspension of disbelief definitely have to have that. Oh, yeah. Right?
In the 1980s. Can you imagine? Like,
yeah,
you just had to dig up a bunch of dirt. Where did the dirt go? Let's just talk about that. The elevator shaft right there. Where did that go? Why did nobody notice?
Yeah, it's like the whole town is there. There's only a few people. They have all these, obviously would have like mountains of trucks and military and all the other things coming in. But we're just gonna, you know, completely.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode.
You know what I mean? So, like, I don't even want to get into that.
I mean, to me, do you want to continue your answer? Or you want me to jump in?
No, don't jump in. Jump in.
Okay. To me, the obvious answer is they must have found the Upside Down somehow in Hawkins, because why would you go through the rigmarole of this bunker under the mall if you could just, you know, open the door, open a gate in your backyard.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we needed it to happen in Hawkins for all the reasons, right? I mean.
Yeah. And I think a lot too has to do with like time travel. And I think that might be an element. That's why they kind of like hinted at it with the, you know, Frozen in 1983, because when they, at some points they were like, you could jump through one gate and possibly go through another gate in another part. It's like, why would it be all the way in Russia? And then we're in the middle of the United States. And then how did they get the Demogorgons there in the cell towards the end of season three? So there's a lot going on there. And like I said, it just keeps feeding these, you know, questions that I have just within that. So yeah. Like I said, I don't know if they're going to be able to explain that, or maybe they will in some throwaway line, who knows. I don't know, but it's, for me, it's really, really really strange the way they found it. And maybe it has something to do with Dr. Brenner, and maybe he had some dealings with them and we never found out about that. And
well, so then let's jump over to what do they want to do with it? So we don't know how they found it for sure, but what now what?
I would say they want to weaponize it in some way, based on what they were doing with the Demogorgons and feeding them and how they were, you know, when they had them in the jail and they were letting them out just to try to test them and feed them. And Jim's like, no, this is what's actually going on. And they're just, you know, pacifying them, you know, for a little while. So I think they're trying to weaponize the Demogorgons somehow. And there's a lot of other things within that going on, but I think they're just trying to weaponize them. Yeah.
Maybe if the nature of the Demogorgons was different, it could have just been like, what the heck are these things? Right. Let's learn about them. But obviously this was not a, you can train it to a house cat sort of creature.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, you can't domesticate these things. No. You can't have your own call Demogorgon. Doesn't work
like that. I got it. You know, like, then the question becomes, if I were a Russian scientist, I can't control this thing. Or, I mean, I can't domesticate this thing, but can I control it? Can I use it? Like, what's next? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So I agree.
All right.
Four and five kind of live together, but there's too many questions, so okay. We're going to split them apart. But what exactly is going on with Will and his connection to Vecna? Is there a connection to the Upside Down or the Mind Flayer or all of the above?
Ooh.
Yeah, see, it's kind of a big giant question.
What is going on with Will and his connection to Vecna?
And if you say a spy, then we're just gonna shut off the ears. That's a wrap, folks.
Spy.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you know, he has some connection because he was down in the Upside Down. He got taken, but Barb got taken, and from what we've seen, maybe she lived for a little bit of time. So, what's the difference between what we've seen with the Demogorgons, in that sense, versus what we saw them do to the prisoners in the prison, because it seems like there's two types of Demogorgons at this point. I mean, we know there's different, you know, types of creatures, right? There's Demodogs, Demobats, blah, blah, blah. But when I sit there and I look at just the nature of how they behave and maybe Vecna has some control over them, I don't know. And what is this connection to Will?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My argument would not be that Will has a connection to Vecna. Will has a connection to the Upside Down as a whole. Will could sense the Mind Flayer. So, you know, unless Vecna becomes, you know, like the Vecna, like, you know, the only, he's the god of the Upside Down, then I would argue that Will is connected to it as a whole.
Yeah. You know, I would, and the reason why I was saying there may be a connection between Will and Vecna is because he really just, you know, whenever he's back in Hawkins, because none of this happened when he was in California, whenever he got back there was this, you know, he could feel him, he could sense him. The whole time he was in California, that never happened. So I'm thinking, and in that same sense, you know, now that I'm kind of like thinking it out loud, thinking it through, he was back closer to where he got taken into the Upside Down. But at the same time, maybe that's, you know, because we know that's the center where Vecna has his house, and we know all of that. So is it both, or is it one or the other? Or maybe it's...
And maybe the answer is the veil between the two in Hawkins is significantly thinner than anywhere else.
Right.
So yeah. Maybe the proximity to Vecna is less the issue than as you get closer to Hawkins, you can feel all of it because it is right there. I mean, at that point when Will shows up in Hawkins, how many gates are open?
There's only the one.
but you know, when Will gets back to Hawkins, there's more than one open.
Yeah, when he gets back,
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, you know, like,
yeah.
So, of course, he could feel everything because, you know, like, when he's sitting in Utah, he's not theoretically, not that we know of, close to any gates that are open.
Right, right. And there's, well, I will say gates open 3.5 because Max opened it, and just like Lucas was saying, when he was in the hospital, he was talking to the rest of them, like, she literally died for a minute, but she came back. So
I think that's on section 3 of our questions. There, to me, there's a whole nother.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like I said, you can really dive into it. So I'm going to pull back. I'll yield the floor.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, did we answer, and there is a connection to the Upside Down and the Mind Flayer or all of the above? I think we kind of went into right?
We kind of went into a little bit, but, you know, I have this kind of like this thought on the Mind Flayer. I'm going into it, and I'm really thinking about just the Mind Flayer. Let's go ahead and just ask the question again and then go from there.
Okay. So, is there a connection to the Upside Down or the Mind Flayer or all of the above?
I would say all of the above.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think he controls just about everything, including Vecna, which is his 5-star general.
Right.
But yeah.
So then that leads us really nicely into question 5, which are there other beings or forces at work in the Upside Down? Like, are we going to meet a bigger bad? Or is Vecna, like you said, the 5-star general, which means the Mind Flayer, and or get something, another entity we haven't even met? What else is happening down there, power-wise?
I would say there definitely is going to be one more big bad. And the name is Boris, not with an I, but with a Y. And he's a dragon. And I think then this is really diving into a lot of D&D lore here. So just, you know, ignore me for a second. but Will did that painting, the painting that he's working on for such a long time. Right. And Eleven alluded to it a little bit. And he reveals it in the van when they're coming back from Utah, or where they're trying to find Eleven. And she alludes to it a little bit there, just saying that he's been painting this thing for so long, and he was presenting it to Mike, and you know, that is one of the characters, one of the dragons from D&D lore, and he's supposedly the big baddie of it all, which the Mind Flayer could very well be Boris. So it could be one and the same, because when Vecna, number one, Peter Ballard, whatever you want to call him, when he went into the Upside Down, Eleven pushed him into the Upside Down, he pretty much turned into Vecna with this kind of like red lightning. I don't know if everybody remembers that part, but he kind of like turned as he was falling down into the Upside Down, or as he was being pushed into it. So that's one of the powers that Boris has, is this, you know, being able to turn things and being able to manipulate. And then Nancy says there's this creature with this gaping mouth, and these creatures are coming into, you know, into the town into where they live. But it's not just, you know, it's not just just in the Upside Down. It's bleeding into the real world now, and he's finally able to manifest himself fully because of these gates that Vecna has opened.
Right.
So I would say definitely there is going to be another big bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that also answers the question, which is only a slight meander. So I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
You know, like Vecna, when you refer to him as his name and number one, like, he was a human. Right. So, you know, like, if we go ahead and decide to put aside that idea that we're just going to believe, like, does he, are there, like, upside down cheeseburgers that he can eat? Is he just surviving on, you know, like, is he no longer human at all?
Yeah. Well, that was the, that was the lore in D&D. He was like what they call a lynch, and he's kind of like this breed of like in between zombie, like, you know, undead creature. Gotcha. So from that point, he turned from human to that point. So he really doesn't need, or is there something else that he wants? Because they could totally retcon a lot of things or change a lot of things from D&D lore, right, and create their own lore, which is some of what the Duffer Brothers have done so far. So I can definitely see where where that could be a thing.
I was really looking forward to the upside down burger shop, but I guess that probably won't.
I would totally go there.
Yeah, right. Say it. All right. back to the sort of real world, quote unquote. All right.
You're not alone. You know.
How did Russia contain the shadow?
That I have no clue. I can't even begin. It's like, how do you catch this thing that they were trying to get out of Will, and is there a connection to the Mind Flayer? Is it one? Are they one and the same? How did they get this in this little jar? It's like, yep. That's like trying to catch a nuclear blast in a jar.
I mean, you know, since we're living solidly in the 80s, it's not like the first time they tried to contain a ghost. You know, the mason jar worked. You had to build the technology.
That's good. That's good. Ghostbusters in this little trap.
Yeah, like, you know, like, they had to build the technology and figure out, okay, how are we going to catch it and contain it? So that means, you know, like, Russia didn't just happen upon recently-ish. Like, I just can't believe that Russia has the technology from season one to current season that would catch and contain.
Yeah.
A part like this. It's not like they had a demobat in a cage or something. Like, this is a big deal.
Yeah, this is this thing that lives in between worlds, and it's like more of a spirit type. It's like trying to catch a ghost, like you said. Right. You know, it's you know, it's like, maybe they understood the science behind it, you know. Right. Maybe.
I mean,
I don't know.
Maybe we need Enzo and Yuri to get us some of these Russian connections, because obviously these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, unless there is a branch of the government we, you know, on the state side that we haven't met yet that has equal amount of research and knowledge, because to me that would be invaluable. They caught it and they kept it for more than, you know, 2 seconds. Like,
right.
That's useful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, speaking of government stateside, again, solid segue into 7, which is the government has to have enough data now to know that Jane 11 isn't the enemy. Will they, meaning Hopper's crew, still have to hide and fight them too?
Ooh, that's a lot going on. Like, I don't know if that would be a wise road to go down, because it would open up so many other questions and doors and things that we just don't have time in one season to complete and come to its completion in a satisfying way, because, you know, like the brothers were saying, they're trying to stick the landing. And if you're including all these different elements, like the government and having this information on her, and if they're going to be a side villain, or maybe, I hope if they do decide to go that route, have it be very early on, like within the first episode, maybe two, and have that resolved, and, you know, Sullivan, the general, realize, oh, she's not the baddie. These creatures that are coming out of the upside down,
correct,
are Vecna, all these, you know, right, these are actually the real threat, the imminent threat that's happening right now. Because you could, I mean, although it would be really exciting and it would be great to see, like, just our tag team going against several different things all at once, but it would be very, very stress inducing. But I don't know. Maybe some people would like that.
I don't know. Like, I feel like we've worked and worked and worked, and we're getting to the final show here. And golly, it would be great to see this sort of, this is not exactly the metaphor that I want, but the enemies to lovers sort of, like, here we fought,
yeah,
and chased and ran and hid and, you know, from the government, and now for the government to go, oh, dang, good call. Like, and then switch over to be like, all right, like, how do we protect the United States from this much bigger than 11 threat?
Yeah, yeah. And for me, just doing that storyline, like having them be attacked by the U.S. military and then have the upside down on the other side, for the U.S. military to just totally just change gears completely and abruptly like that, that for me would, it's like, I don't know if I could get on board with that. You know, it would be too abrupt for me as far as, and I think a lot of people probably think that way. It's like, oh, that's kind of quick for this to be wrapped up in, you know, 45 minutes, this whole thing we basically had for an entire season that was super stuffed and super large, and we just handled this in one episode. I don't know if that would be a good way as far as storytelling. And
then like, to me, it would be a great way of storytelling because, you know, you think you're fighting a big bad, you know, like, here we have all these government resources and all, you know, all of these people with one goal.
Yeah.
And then can you imagine if they were so one-minded that 11 is a threat, 11 is a threat, 11 is a threat. Here is Hawkins imploding, literally.
Wouldn't be too far off.
No, but God, it would be amazing for them to go, oh, crap, my 11th threat is like a baby threat compared to, look at this. Right. I mean, come on now. We'll see. It would be nice. Like, okay, fine. We're not BFFs, but at least maybe they can, you know, live and let live a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not thinking so?
No. Okay. No. No, I'm not.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see. We'll see. We'll have to wrap up, follow this show up with whenever we're done with that season and see who's right. Spoiler alert, it's gonna be me.
It's lonely being right.
It's gonna, you know, be me.
It's lonely being right. It's okay. I can live on the mountaintop alone. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Okay. So, you know, we kind of have figured out the full backstory on Dr. Brenner's operation, sort of from beginning now to his end, and which makes me ask the question, and which is our final question for this episode, is, are there similar programs or people around the world like Dr. Brenner's program and Jane or 11?
No.
Dr. Brenner is just like this mad genius. He's the only one in the whole wide, like, Russia can throw the shadow in a jar and it's cool, but nobody else out there has found anything like what Jane can do?
I would like to think that, because that would be really compelling. And in reality, there probably would be, like, more programs, more isolated, more separated programs around the world that are doing some of the exact same things. They're sharing information. But I think that this was just a super isolated thing that they were experimenting with, that they came across, because Henry Creel's origins were right there in Hawkins, Indiana.
Well, and I refuse to believe that Henry Creel's is that magical, that he is the only one that could, you know, basically lay the foundation for this program.
Right.
You know, will we find out about him? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But I just, in my mind, there's, you know, like, through human history, you see this quote-unquote discovery, and then as you look back through the lens of the future, you can see, yes, this civilization, this country, observed, found, discovered this, but it was happening simultaneously over here and here and here, or years after, or decades after. So,
right.
Like, the idea that, I'm sorry, like, maybe that's just my need to take some power away from Vecna and Brenner, both of them, to say, like, y'all aren't the only ones.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not that special.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely be more of a compelling story to to have all of these different elements around the world, these different kids. But as we know, even the ones that are in other places that have been in other places, like Kali, you know, even though she's up in Chicago, she was from that lab. And there's this, you know, because, you know, that all came from that whole MK Ultra, which was actually a real government program. But they, you know, I'm not telling you because I know you know that, right? But just people that
no, you're fine. You're fine. Know that,
you know, because it's like, oh, really? It's like, yeah, it was like this whole messed up thing they did with drugs and LSD and a whole bunch of stuff. But that was an isolated program that was shut down, you know, by the government, that was ran by the government, which is kind of weird.
Right.
They were doing these experiments because they were doing exactly the same thing that Brenner was trying to do, trying to open up their minds, trying to, you know, and that was some of what Eleven was doing in the in between the liminal space. You know, she was trying to get these government secrets from Russia. And that's what he was using her for. I don't know. And maybe. And now that I think about those terms, there's a real strong possibility. I'll probably say maybe 55%. I always like 55%. It's a little bit over the halfway point. But it's a little bit over. You know, it's close enough to where I am, but further enough away where I can keep my mind open.
Oh, that's that way, if you're right, you're right. And if you're wrong, you're not all that wrong.
See, you get me.
I'm only 5% wrong. I mean, come on.
Just 5%. You know, that's it.
I see you.
But yeah, I think they possibly could do that. See, you've convinced me. You've convinced me right here in real time. You've convinced me.
I think you convinced yourself with your meanderings. But, you know, I mean, I'm glad that we all came along for the ride.
Everyone loves my meandering.
Do they?
we'll see once the podcast numbers come out.
Okay, we'll see.
Big dip.
Then is it going to be 55% likely that it's your meanderings that people enjoy listening to, or the content, or anyway? Well, you know, that remains to be seen. We'll save that for another time.
Who's meandering now?
I think we've reached the end of our path today.
I think we have. We've completely reached the end of our journey.
All right. Well, we'll talk next time.
Yep. See you in the Upside Down.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries, the story of a lonely housewife in Maine who searched for love in her newspaper's personal columns. 2 years ago, she went on a blind date and vanished. And on the Queen Mary, dozens of eyewitnesses claim they have seen or heard ghosts. Last month, parapsychologists tape-recorded phantom sounds of what some believe is a shipwreck that took place 40 years earlier. We'll also examine the case of a man awaiting trial for the murder of two teenage girls. Joe Shepherd has escaped. Perhaps you can help catch him. Tonight's cases feature ordinary people thrust into a vortex of mystery, heartbreak, and intrigue. Each one is searching for that vital clue to end a story that so far has no ending. Perhaps you can help. Join me. You may be able to help solve a mystery.
On the other side.